I've explained to you knowledge, still more confidential. Deliberate on this fully, and then do what you wish to do. The Lord has already explained to Arjuna the knowledge of Brahma. The Lord has already explained to Arjuna the knowledge of Brahma-bhuta. One who is in the Brahma-bhuta condition is joyful. He never laments, nor does he desire anything. That is due to confidential knowledge. Krishna also discloses knowledge of the Supersoul. This is also Brahman knowledge, knowledge of Brahman, but it is superior. Here the words, yathe chasi tatha kuru, as you like you may act, indicate that God does not interfere with the little independence of the living entity. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has explained in all respects how one can elevate his living condition. The best advice imparted to Arjuna is to surrender unto the Supersoul seated within his heart. By right discrimination, one should agree to act according to the order of the Supersoul. That will help one become situated constantly in Krishna consciousness, the highest perfectional stage of human life. Arjuna is being directly ordered by the personality of Godhead to fight. Surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in the best interest of the living entities. It is not for the interest of the Supreme. Before surrendering, one is free to deliberate on this subject as far as the intelligence goes. That is the best way to accept the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such instruction also comes through the spiritual master, the bona fide representative of Krishna. Vandeham Sri Guroshi Atapada Kamalam Sri Guruna Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sadhana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savatutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Titan Nidivam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Cha Sri Krishna Titan Nibhu Nityanam Sri Devigaradha Sri Vasadi Kaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada discusses how Krishna is ordering Arjuna to fight. However, in the verse itself, we see that Krishna says, yathe chasi tatha kuru. You do as you like. Sometimes people quote this. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, do as you like. Therefore, you should, the instruction of Bhagavad Gita is do as you like. However, Krishna has explained that if we follow his instruction, then our life will be auspicious. And if we don't, it will be very inauspicious. So Krishna is giving the instruction, which is for our benefit. He's giving instruction for it, which is for our benefit, but at the same time he's making it clear that you have the choice to follow or not. He's not forcing us to follow his instruction. Now, this is important to know that the instructions are there in Bhagavad Gita, but we have to take the choice to follow or not to follow. This comes in every stage of life. Some people think that, some people have the approach that, when you accept a guru, he just decides everything for you. You become something like a robot, because you should do whatever your guru says. But at the same time, the guru wants to see that the disciple becomes strong himself in Krishna consciousness, not just like a child. Even child discipline is there, but they have their own independence. But they should act under the direction of the parent. But the parent wants to see that the children grow up and become independently thoughtful and able to act. In other words, that example is given, that there are different kinds of sons or servants. The best is who knows what is to be done without having to be ordered. He's Guru Mukha Padma Vaka Chitite Korea Oika Ana Kariha Munayasha. He's taken the instruction, the words of the spiritual master, and fixed them up in his heart without any other design. Therefore, he knows what the spiritual master wants and does it even without being asked. The next best is one who does, when he's told, he does wholeheartedly. The next best is when he's told, he does it, but not very conscientiously, begrudgingly. follows, but doesn't do a very nice service. His heart's not in it. And the worst type, who's not really a disciple at all, is one who gets the instruction and doesn't follow. He's a rascal. Fully a rascal. Just showbottle disciple. So Krishna is giving thee choice to do as you like. It means we have to decide, are we going to follow Krishna's instructions or not? Now Krishna has given a panorama of instructions in Gita. He's spoken about karma, jnana, yoga, bhakti, and he's made it clear that bhakti, surrender to Krishna, that is the topmost path, it's the only auspicious path, as is elaborated upon in Srimad Bhagavatam in many verses, describes how bhakti, devotion, shriyashutin bhakti, utasyate vibhav, vishanti ye kevala bodhi bhakti ye. He gives the example that the example is given in Bhagavatam that any other paths are not auspicious. It's simply like husking husk, trying to get some grain out of husk that's already been husked. There's no benefit. Shama eva yi kevalam. It's simply just working but with no actual benefit. So bhakti is the only auspicious path. But then even within that, everyone has to see how to act. Arjuna was specifically told to act, mamanasmara yudhyacha, think of me and fight. Now that specific instruction is not meant for everyone, it's specifically meant for Arjuna. It's not that after reading Bhagavad Gita, everyone should get a bow and arrow and put on armor and start to fight. But the gist of it is that one should think of Krishna, that comes first, as the main point. And then also perform his particular occupational duty. For Arjuna, that was fighting. For someone else, it may be, in most cases, it will be something else. Think of me and fight, Krishna says. So exactly how we are to live our lives in Krishna consciousness, that will be different in every case. But the point is that we should live our lives in Krishna consciousness. But it's not stereotyped. That's why we have Shastra. We also have Guru to give personal direction, how to apply the instructions of Shastra in our lives according to the particular situation we're in. But even Guru, he won't force. He'll give the good instructions. Sometimes he may be very strong. Sometimes he may be very strong, but ultimately, the disciple has to choose whether to follow or not. And in some matters, especially one topic I'm going to speak about now is about our ashram and how to live in this world in Krishna consciousness. So everyone has to make some life decisions of their own. That you may do in consultation or under the direction of others. But some things we have to make some decisions ourselves. I'm particularly referring to the question came up to me about instructing, giving some advice to the, what are called here, the brahmacharis. This is sometimes called the brahmachari ashram in Dubai, but as I'm saying, you should probably call it a different name because really a brahmachari doesn't mean someone who, they're practicing Krishna consciousness, but they're, and they're not married, but they work in a karmi job for so many hours a day. That's not actual brahmachari life. I mean, if the guru specifically orders that you should do this, then that may be. Just like Prabhupada in the early days of his mission in America, there was no income for the society, so many of the devotees, they would work in a factory or a restaurant or something, and most of them didn't have any particular qualification. Dropouts from college. So they were doing that under the order of the guru, but that was an unusual situation. Traditionally, brahmachari life means brahmachari guru kule. You should live in the ashram. So anyway, the question came that, well, how the bachelor is also not such a good word because it gives, the connotation is there in English. It has a connotation of someone who's hunting. Or flirting, hunting for women or flirting with them. one who is free to enjoy. The connotation is there. So unmarried men in Krishna consciousness are not exactly brahmacharis. It's what should be their duty, how should they conduct their life, particularly because in the material condition, and especially when one is young, there is agitation, sexual agitation, especially when you're living in a very materialistic society, especially the way everyone's brought up in the modern age. So that is there, how to cope up with all these things and go on and make progress in Krishna consciousness. So my general advice is that, well, first of all, that as long as we're in completely materialistic consciousness, then our outlook is how to enjoy this material world. But having come to Krishna consciousness, and when reading Prabhupada's books, then the consciousness should be, naturally the consciousness should be different. And it will be different. Anyone who takes up Krishna consciousness and reads Prabhupada's books, naturally anyone who takes this up, then the feeling is there that Krishna consciousness is so wonderful, let's take it up, let's get into it. So my advice to unmarried young men who take to Krishna consciousness, the best advice is go for it, be Krishna conscious, don't get entangled in family life, because it is an entanglement. You don't have to work in a job 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, 14 hours, whatever it is. You don't have to do that. And you don't have to have a wife and children. You can dedicate your life fully in Krishna consciousness. There are ashrams of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness where you can live. And of course your work, it's not that you're just simply sitting and passing the time of day, but in our ashrams devotees are also busy. But it's all directly service to Krishna. Now you've had we've all had many, many lifetimes working in Dubai or the equivalent. Many, many lifetimes in many creations. We've done all this before. Working hard for a living in many species of life. So now having got the opportunity, why not? At least you can consider that as we're coming to that if you're not married, then why bother? Just be Krishna, be a brahmachari, dedicate your life for preaching Krishna consciousness and for fully Krishna conscious activities. And you can join an ashram of our society and chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And of course, the desires for sense gratification may be there, but if we come to the higher platform of knowledge, then you can just brush that off. Just be Krishna conscious. Living in the society, living in our ashrams, you can automatically, the program is there, you rise early every day, you have Mangalati, 4:15, 4:30, and chanting, regulated life chanting, studying, preaching, serving the mission. And in this way, you can just spend your whole life like this and go back to Godhead very easily and very nicely. That's the best thing, which I would strongly recommend those who are not married to consider it very seriously. Why not? Why take on the extra trouble of family, wife, home, rent, mortgage, career, so many different things? Actually, when I joined the temple, I saw that I'd been in some time, and I joined them at a young age, but I asked the town president, who was a grihastha, that I said something about, I asked some question about grihasthas and Krishna consciousness, and he said, take my advice. If you want to be happy, don't get married. So I thought, well, he's married, he should know. He's a much better, you could be Krishna conscious, you don't need to get married to be Krishna conscious. If you're not married, then why do it at all? Just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So I took his advice. I mean, I wasn't thinking of anything. So that's the best. Just came to Dubai for career enhancement. So the best career is, instead of another meaning of the word career in English, it means, the general understanding is career means to your profession and your occupation and getting ahead and all this, sort of this so-called getting ahead. Another nonsense idea. It just means getting more entangled in Maya, that's all. But another meaning of the word career is, you say, my car careered. That means if a car is out of control and it skids here and there, that's another meaning of the word career, where you're just, no, it can be a car or it can be a person who's running and he's lost his balance. It means where you're out of control and you're moving very fast and it's liable to be a disaster. So actually a career is like that also, because you're not in control, you're just under the control of others who want you to, they're trying to squeeze as much as they can out of you, and you're thinking, I'm getting advanced in my career, but actually you're just becoming more and more entangled in material life. So better is to, instead of careering through 8,400,000 species of life, is to have a, become a, advanced in Krishna consciousness. That doesn't mean that, okay, I'll join ISKCON and after some time I'll become a town president, then I'll become a GBC, then I'll become a guru, I'll get to the top in my career. Yeah. Once, I used to go to Burma regularly. So, you know, as a brahmachari, then one time shortly after I took sannyas, I went there. And so the devotees there, there's some elderly Marwari people. So I told them, actually, you shouldn't address me as Ilapati anymore, but now I took sannyas, so now you're supposed to say Maharaj. And so one turned to the other and said, promotion ho gaya. Got his promotion, so it's not like that. It's a real career in Krishna consciousness is trinadapi samichana, how you can become more humble. So anyway, that's the best suggestion. Forget all this nonsense of career advancement and happy families and all this kind of thing. That's the best thing. However, if you're not going to do that, well, the next best thing is, instead of, if you are going to get married, do it. That's there also, Grihastha Ashram. There's many difficulties in Grihastha life. Maybe the young unmarried men here are seeing, and now they see the devotees come, Grihasthas, and they have their nice children, and they're smiling, and they're happy, and well, that seems very nice, and it is nice to be a Krishna-conscious Grihastha. It's nicer than being a non-Krishna-conscious Grihamedi, but, you know, apart from all the smiles, and there's a lot of difficulty. You ask any Grihastha that there are many difficulties in family life. It's not, you don't see it until you get involved in it. There are to maintain a family is a lot of difficulty, a lot of tension. So you should know that also. It's not just there may be an illusion. Everyone thinks that, you know, when I get married, everything will be very perfect and wonderful, but there are many, many difficulties. I mean, even some, if the wife is compatible with the husband, that is very nice. It's not always so. But even if there's compatibility, then there's so many anxieties bringing up children. Even you want your children to be Krishna conscious, but in many cases, the children, even the parents, are good devotees and they bring up their children as well as they can. But the allurements of modern society, the children become spoiled. So then there may be many disappointments, or even if there aren't, still. I mean, I know some devotees who are very good, serious devotees, both husband and wife, and their children are very nice devotees, but still, they have to work like asses to maintain the situation. So, this is the reality. You should know that. But anyway, if you feel that for whatever reason you're not ready to be a brahmachari, and then it's better not to be in the twilight zone, either this way or that way, then best to get married as soon as possible. Of course, there may be extenuating circumstances, just like your elder brother may be not married, he has to get married first, or you may not be, your job may not be such that you're ready, you're not financially sound enough to be. There may be extenuating circumstances, but the idea is that you should decide. At some point in time, you should decide, and don't leave it too late. You should decide, you're going to marry or not marry. If you're not going to marry, then be a brahmachari, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Of course, there may be difficulties in that also. It's not that. There are difficulties everywhere in all of human existence. It's not that. That's another illusion, that if you simply by joining the temple of ISKCON, then all of a sudden all problems cease. That's also, but the problem of family entanglement, at least, that is not there. So if you are going for family life, better do it as soon as possible. That doesn't mean that you have to do it exactly tomorrow, but you know, immediately propose to the first girl you see or whatever. But everything should be done in a sane way. That means you see the married devotees, and they can make some arrangement like this. Now we're talking about young men. Of course, for young women, there's no question, they must be married. I mean, there are rare cases. Mirabai, Gangamata Goswamini, but Prabhupada, not only Prabhupada, the whole Vedic culture is that it's not at all recommended that women remain unmarried. Men may do. If they're fixed in their brahmachari life, if they're fixed in their spiritual practices. But for women, it's not at all recommended. Neither for their own good or for that of others. They should be married as soon as possible. Now they have demoniac laws in India. They're not even allowed to be married till they're 18 by law. But traditional cultures, they should be married even before puberty, which is actually a very good system, but it's not very practical at the present time. Although that's still going on in some ways, just like we see, even now you see young men, they're married to a young girl, and they're already not officially married, but they were betrothed from a very... It was already decided by the parents, even when they were little children. So it was already... I mean, I've seen... Still you've seen like that, some people... I know some different devotees. Even in Malaysia, one of our devotees got married. He was from the childhood, they were betrothed. And also one of my disciples, he would have made a great brahmachari, he's a great preacher. But he was already... Actually, he joined when he was already married. But he was married from a... already decided from a very young age. So it can be done like that also. You can, even from a young age, if the parents, if they see their daughter and they can speak to some other parents and do the horoscopes, even without officially marriage, it's actually a very good system. That, of course, later on, if the boy decides to be a brahmachari, then if he's really fixed that I'm not going to get involved in this, there are cases like that. I mean, Ramchandra Kaviraj, one of the great devotees in the line of Chaitanya, in our Gaudiya Vaishnava line. Actually, he was married at a young age, but he never had any interest in married life. You see also that the cousin of Ramanujacharya, Govinda, I don't know the Tamil name, but his mother requested that he spend it. He was married at a young age, but he had no interest, and he was completely renounced. So his mother requested, at least just to please me, please spend one night with your wife. So he did. He spent one night in the room with his wife. He spent the whole night glorifying the Lord, doing kirtan like this. So he spent a night with his wife. He said, yes, I fulfilled your desire. So if they're very much renounced, then what can you do? But generally people are not in the same genuine. So if that's fixed up from an early age, that's very nice. Otherwise, can be done later, but not too late. And nowadays, of course, the whole idea is that girls, they should get a career. This is all, actually it's rascaldom. It's simply, it's promoting illicit sex, or prostitution is probably called it. That the girls, they have a career, and then they're mixing up with so many men with no commitment, and then naturally attraction is there, and then they have some affair, and even they get married, but there's still, that habit is there to be mixing with so many men, so they're still having affairs with men while they're at work, and then they want divorce, and so many rascal things come. This idea. Because it's all for the profit motive that women should work also, so then we can also make more money. And this whole idea of women's liberation, as Prabhupada said, it's a trick by the men to cheat the women, because then the men don't take any response. You're equal, so that means there's no protection. And simply men are enjoying without responsibility. They have the idea, we're equal. So, but then who ends up carrying the baby? It's not the man. The woman is left with the baby, and she has to. Of course, they have this idea of alimony in the way you have to pay money. It's a disastrous society. Modern society is Rakshasa society. I mean, even we don't hear that Hiranyakashipu had any divorce. Even the demons, they had some culture. The Vedic demons, you'll see that in the Mohini Murti episode, there's the demons. I mean, after all, they're sons of rishis also. The Daityas, they're also sons of Kashyapa Muni. And the Danavas also, they're also sons of Kashyapa Muni. So, in the Mohini Murti episode, it said that why the Asuras, one reason they didn't forbid, they understood at some point that Mohini is cheating us, but they didn't. One reason they didn't protest, they didn't strivivadaha, they didn't want to get into a controversy or an argument with a woman, because that they had some culture. But modern life means there's no culture, and they're passing it off as advanced. And Indians are so foolish that they're following it, instead of following their own culture, which is meant for liberation, it's meant for going back to Godhead. Instead they're thinking all modern ideas. Modern means rascal, practically you can say. Whatever is modern, you can simply substitute the word rascal and it will fit exactly. It's horrible. The whole modern society is completely horrible. The whole way it's going on. Anyway, if you're in a storm at sea, you can try to protect yourself, but some effect is going to be there. So similarly, we are living in the modern society and we can't completely divorce ourselves from it. Of course, Prabhupada wanted to do that. He wanted to set up farm communities in which devotees can live on their own terms without having to be influenced by this rascal, rakshasa society. But as much as we are living in this modern world, so there are certain things you're legally not supposed to marry your children until they're at least 18. And so there's some consideration, but this basically women, their role is as wives and mothers in a sane society. Otherwise they have their career and then the children, they have children and they're too busy to look after the children, and the children grow up with the TV and the microwave and no love. Parents try to compensate that by giving them toys. They think, I'm really kind to my children, I'm buying them so many toys. But they more than toys, children don't even need toys. It's another nonsense that you fill up your home with so many useless toys, which they don't play with most of the time anyway. But what they need is attention and affection, especially from the mother. Father also, especially from the mother. But if the mother's too busy, she doesn't have time for the children, then what affection is she going to give? Mm-hmm. So, and then the children grow up, just like you're seeing in America now, it's become a common thing for children to pull out a gun and shoot so many others dead. I heard recently a 6-year-old in America. Did you see that? 6-year-old shot someone, another 6-year-old dead. So this is the result of modern life, sense gratification, women's liberation, working women. It's all there wondering, oh, how did it happen? This is how it happens. TV, it's all. It drives people crazy. Even at the age of 6, they're so mad. They just follow what they see on TV. So at least India has some very slight culture left from what was the original culture. Why don't you recognize that and follow that? You see, Prabhupada in his books is speaking so much of Vedic culture because that is the culture that supports Krishna consciousness. And this modern Rakshasa culture, it makes you into a demon. If you follow the modern way of life, you become a demon and you go to hell. And your present life is hell also. And recently in our society in ISKCON, there have been this women's liberation is being promoted by certain quarters because Prabhupada's instructions on Vedic culture were in many ways, in many cases, misinterpreted and misunderstood, where it said that the wife should be submissive to the husband. So they took it to mean that the husband, without any training himself, just mistreats the wife. So that's a misunderstanding. But then there is the result, or the solution is not that then women should become completely independent, but rather that there should be training for men and women how to live as human beings. In the West, they have no idea how to behave like human beings. And you'll find in ISKCON, in the Western countries, that among our devotees, there are so many divorces and think it's normal, but it's not normal. It's sinful and it's rascaldom and it causes so many problems. I mean, even if you have a problem, it's better to you remain married and live with it and go through with it. But if you divorce it, it makes more problems. It sets, apart from anything else, it sets a very bad precedent. So you at least you have some culture. Just like the tendency to respect sannyasis. It's not, if you go to Britain, for example, it's not there in the culture. People, they sometimes complain. They think it's, they'll see that someone is serving the sannyasi prasad and he's saying, hey, bring this, bring that, and someone is complaining. Well, why are you running around? Why are you serving him like that? Whereas in Sri Rangam, your nephew was seeing how the disciples were serving him. He was saying, oh, this is very nice. I never saw it. We heard about it, but we never saw it. So they're appreciated. Whereas in the Rakshasa culture, they'll protest. Why are you bowing down to a man? Why are you serving him? Because they have the idea everyone is equal. But that's not culture. Means that there's gradation. Not everyone's all the same. Equal rights. In Vedic culture, no, not equal rights. Brahmin is superior. Among Brahmanas, sannyasi is superior. Among husband and wife, the husband takes the superior position. Wife is supposed to be submissive. Although by their submissiveness, actually they control their husbands, but in a civilized way. Not by throwing things at each other and screaming and pulling their hair and all this kind of thing. Or not by trying to mentally overpower them. But by sweetness and submissiveness, that's the way. So there's equal, and then there are equal rights, then why should anyone bow down to a guru or a sannyasi? Then this idea, equal rights, it's rascal, it's another rascal. The next thing will be that disciples' rights, they go on strike against the guru. If you're going to say equal rights, then it comes in every sphere. So that's another nonsense. So the Vedic culture is very nice. You try and follow as much as possible. Men, they should be responsible to look after their families. And women should, means responsible means they have to provide income and they have to give direction. And the wife, sweet, submissive. The man already had enough, you know, harassment at work. If he comes home and the wife is also harassing him, then it becomes intolerable. But then the wife, if she's also harassed at work, then she comes home and then, you know, then it's just two bombs. It's like two, we say nuclear for nuclear bomb. You know, they're both feeling frustrated and then they fight. So rather the wife, you know, even if she's feeling frustrated with this, that she must always be there. It's a shelter for the husband. And he needs some place where he can, you know, there's no love at work, especially in the modern age. It's just, you cut my throat, I cut yours. Sometimes I scratch your back, and when it's convenient, I cut your throat. That's all. If it's convenient, we'll scratch each other's back. But when it becomes inconvenient, then cut the throat, that's all. So at least at home, there should be some come home and there's fighting, and then it's people go crazy. You see in the modern age, people go crazy. They shoot others, and they engage in all kinds of abusing children and all kinds of nasty, perverted sex and all kinds of things. Another thing that's coming up is, it's very big now, is this homosexuality, both for men and women, because they're thinking that, you know, why bother having children? It's just a headache. And anyway, men in general, they can relate with men better, so why bother with women? And the women are thinking men are too much trouble, so why bother with them? And it's completely demoniac. So this all comes from not following the basic principles of human civilization, which were there in the West previously also. There's no divorce in the West previously. It was considered very bad. Now it's considered just completely normal. And it's going to be like that in India too, because they're following the West in every way. Soon it'll become prestigious in India to introduce this. Even that I'm divorced, it'll become prestigious. I've almost finished my work on a book on Vaishnava etiquette and behavior. So I happened to come across some quote from, I saw there's some book on the complete book of etiquette. It's for Americans, how to behave and how to act and all this. So I thought, well, let me have a look at that. I might get some ideas. It was amazing that there was nothing in that book. The only thing was something about devotees could learn is about driving. That when you're driving, you should be polite and not cut others out and like this. There's nothing in the book about respecting others. Nothing. Nothing in the whole book. But what struck me was that they were giving advice on how to perform your second marriage. You know, how you should do it, and because it's a little bit different to the first marriage. And then if you're going to have a divorce, how you should explain it to the children. I mean, what, right? This is a standard book of behavior for American people. So don't follow that. In our Krishna conscious world, we should be setting the best standard. Respecting elders, and also how elders, how they have to deal with juniors. That, not that, you know, very puffed, I'm older than you, I'm better than you. There was some story someone was telling me that some devotees, they were getting their Brahmin initiation, so one said, well, let me go in first to get the mantra. So he went in first. And then the others went afterwards, means 5-10 minutes later. You know, one by one, they took the mantra. So then after some time, there was some incident in the temple, and there was some discussion about how to do something, and one said to the other, well, you should listen to what I say because I'm senior to you. And he said, well, why senior? I got my Gayatri mantra before you. It was 5 minutes before the others. Thing, you see, now I'm initiated and before you, you see. Therefore, you should listen to what I say. So that's we should be careful. Those who are senior, they shouldn't become. One thing is not to falsely declare seniority. Another thing is how to behave towards those who are juniors and not to artificially try to make oneself senior. And this culture is a very big subject. That's why I'm writing. The glimpses of traditional Indian life give some idea. One thing I was discussing with Sri Vala Prabhu yesterday, which he can also start to institute, is when we come to these satsangs, let's wear Vaishnava dress. It just struck me when I saw the faded denims entering the door. Maybe we could have, of course there's not so much space, but if the programs are mostly here, then people could keep the dhoti here. I don't know how practical that is. Yeah, it doesn't take. I mean, I do it when I'm going out. I have to put on the pandan shirt. So when I go to someone's house, some apartment here, and I change, put on tilak every time, put this on. It doesn't take very long. But it's so much nicer. It creates such a nice atmosphere. You're dressed in your dhoti, kurta, tilak. It only takes 2 minutes to put on tilak. It creates an atmosphere like that. There's kami clothes. Well, there's an identity that goes with that. There's a consciousness that goes with that. And there's a consciousness with wearing Vaishnav dress. All these kind of things. I mean, you may think, well, what difference does it make? In one sense, it does. You can chant Hare Krishna with pandan shirt, or you can chant Hare Krishna with dhoti. But this is the dress of the spiritual world. Krishna's not wearing Nike shoes and pants and shirt. He doesn't wear it. So why not follow that? Another thing we were discussing last night, now as usual I'm digressing and going here and there. We were discussing last night about ladies' hair fashions. When I first came to India, then I saw that any lady you didn't consider a lady, whose hair was loose, or even if it was on the side, you thought they're either a Christian or a prostitute or just very degraded. That's, wasn't it, 20 years ago? If the hair wasn't parted in the middle and tied up with one choti at the back, and that was considered very, very low class. Now it's all hair fashions and cut their hair, very inauspicious. My hair should be cut by widows, so it's like wishing your husband to be dead. It's very inauspicious for women to cut it. So in South Indian towns, sometimes the women have their head fully shaved, but that's not the general practice. Actually, the hair should only be open in the presence of the husband. When Prabhupada explained that it's supposed to be making an attraction for everybody. So that's why I know in South India, but I think in Tamil Nadu they don't cover the head usually, isn't it? But in North India, actually, I was told even in Andhra that Namadas Swami was telling me that I don't know about Tamil Nadu, but in Andhra the culture used to be that the head would always be covered. That was the general. At home, maybe, but they'd be open. But if they'd come into the presence of elders, then immediately they must cover the head out of respect. So all these things are there. Prabhupada described that even his mother, she would never be seen outside the home. If she had to go outside, even to the next house, she would be taken in a palanquin. She wouldn't be seen. That was the culture. And until recently we saw that the girls going to school, they'd be accompanied to and from. That's when they started going to school. Otherwise they weren't going to school. That was considered a disgrace that they should go to school. Why are you sending your daughter to school? You can't mean she has to do a job, she has to work and get it. You can't maintain like this. So the culture has changed. But the culture, it affects our whole way of thinking. So the Vedic culture is that which is given by Krishna for spiritual elevation. And there's the Rakshasa culture. Even Asuric, like you say, even the traditional Asuras, they had some culture. The modern society is less cultured than that of Hiranyakashipu in some ways. They're just Rakshasas. So anyway, we're getting digressing a little bit. It all fits together. But life decisions, how you should get married. If you're going to get married, do it. And do it responsibly. You enter marriage, you have to take the responsibility and go through with it. It's going to be tough, but you have to do it. But the next thing is that you have to stay with it and take that responsibility and bring up your children in Krishna consciousness as much as possible. But then the next point is that when the children are grown up, then again you have to think of renunciation. Not that simply remain at home with the family all the life, but there comes a point when the children are grown up and the man should start to become detached from time, and the woman should remain under the protection of elder sons, and the man should become detached from that, because if at the time, the tendency at the time of death is to think of one's wife, and then you become a woman in your next life, you don't go to Krishna. If the wife thinks of her husband and the husband's a devotee and he goes back to Godhead, then you go back to Godhead. So that's very nice. But the whole Vedic culture aims at renunciation. Grihastha life means there's some license is given for enjoyment. License means there's some restriction also. When you get a driving license, that means you're licensed to drive a car, but it means you have to drive on the right side of the road, within the speed limits. There are rules and regulations to be followed also. So a license for sense gratification doesn't mean that married life is a free party where you just do whatever you like. There are rules. So sense enjoyment is allowed, but there are so many rules and regulations to be followed. But ultimately, one should come out of that also. And one should be aware of that. That while entering family life, that now I have to go through that responsibility, but at some point in time, at the age of 50 is recommended, that one should become detached from that also. Now that's only possible if you're cultivating Krishna consciousness and cultivating a spirit of detachment, even in family life. That's why you should hear these things, and sannyasis should speak these things also. That's the duty of sannyasis to awaken or at least to keep grihasthas informed, not to keep them in illusion that this is your eternal position, because the tendency is that the nature of material attachment is to think that, well, you know, this is, I am the body and these are the offspring. Dehapatya. Apatya means offspring. Deha apatya. It gives the apatya is that which has come out of your body, fallen down from your body. Byproduct, yeah. So, deha patya kalita drishu. Atma-sanyeshva satsvapi tesham pramata-nidhanam. Pashana, what is that? Tesham pramata-nidhanam. Pashana-pina-pashati. Those who are blind to knowledge of self-realization, they think that the fallible soldiers of home, wife, children, a personal body, these can protect me, but they cannot protect us. Now, sometimes people say, well, all these are meant for the non-devotees, but it's meant for devotees, householders, also, as much as we are attached. That much it applies to us also. Of course, this spirit of renunciation awakening in grihasthas, that should also be like understood in a sane way. Not that, oh, okay, this is all maya, all right, so just leave it all. No, when you take that responsibility, you have to take it, but at the same time, you have to cultivate a spirit of detachment. Now, that spirit of detachment doesn't also mean that you say you go home and tell your wife, you're maya. It may be. The wife is maybe maya to the husband and vice versa. But the idea is not renunciation is there, but also husband and wife, they should work together to help each other to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. That is grihastha life. But at the same time, one should know that even if they're working together very nicely in Krishna consciousness, at the same time, they should know that the tendency is even so to have some, even if they're very well matched and they're very Krishna conscious, but the tendency is, just by the very nature of that situation, that some material attachment will be there. And usually it's not some, it's quite a lot. It's a heavy attachment. It's a very strong attachment. So and even in the best of situations, it's some attachment is there. As Prabhupada wrote in one purport, every man is too much attached to his wife. If you read Prabhupada's books, it's heavy, because the Shastra is heavy. It's always stressing this point. So these things should be understood sanely, and sannyasis, they should speak these things, especially, so that can be understood. And although it's difficult to hear for the grihasthas, it's much more pleasing to hear the goo-goo gaga of their children and to hear their children speak to them in a very sweet way, Pitaji. It's very pleasing. It's not very pleasing to have someone come and tell you that this is the cause of material bondage. is not very pleasing to hear. But like any kind of happiness in the mode of passion, what seems like nectar in the beginning turns to poison in the end. I was just in the Bundelkhand, near to Chitrakoot. It's what you might call it's a less developed part of India. So I was speaking to one man, he has his family there, his four sons, his business. They all have their all different businesses. He has his own business, which his eldest son took on, the others have. One of them doesn't have a business, he's just helping the others. And they all have their children. And so, you know, he has a happy family life and they're pious people, but he's miserable. He told me as such. He didn't even have to tell me. He said, I had no peace throughout my whole life. I'm still not getting any peace. I can't get any peace. Always the children are crying and surrounding me, and all the family problems come to me. So, Panchasurdvang Vanang Rajit. The injunction is after the age of 50, one should go to the forest, come out. Vanaprastha life means that there are different approaches to Vanaprastha life, but it means to gradually become detached. So you should be prepared for that also. To come out of the, simply go on working all your life, and things will go on. Let the young men, they can look after the family, and it will go on. As Prabhupada commented about when he left home and he eventually took sannyas, he said that, well, if someone dies, somehow or other life goes on. Even if you're thinking, I am indispensable to my family. Charles de Gaulle of France, he made a very interesting statement once. He said, the graveyards are full of indispensable people. Life goes on. Somehow or other. No one's indispensable. So we also have to think about renunciation. While in grihastha life, should be very responsible. Part of that responsibility is to also set an example to others and to your own children, and responsibility to yourself and to your spiritual master to go the whole way back to Godhead. So these are some general points about how we have to choose how to lead our lives in Krishna consciousness. Exactly how we apply that in our own individual case will be different in each individual case, because every person is an individual person and the circumstances are different for different people. The general point is that a young man should choose to marry or not marry. Best advice, if you understand what is the importance of Krishna consciousness, is dedicate your life for preaching Krishna consciousness. Don't get entangled. That is the best advice for young men. Otherwise, if you are to be married, then do it in a responsible manner. And for parents, they should seriously see to getting their daughters married. The daughters should be trained from a young age, far more important than training them in history, geography, math, sciences, training them in cooking, chastity, gentle behavior, all these things is far more important. Even if they may be a nuclear scientist or whatever, actually I don't think there are hardly any women nuclear scientists. There's certain things that women, they may be intelligent in some ways, but for certain things, their intelligence doesn't work in certain ways. They can be very intelligent in managing the home, they can be doctors or whatever, but certain things they're not suited for. But however great a career they may have been able to do, they won't be happy unless they have a husband to protect them. And the husband won't want to protect them if they're always fighting with him or trying to be better than him. So better they're trained in shyness, chastity, cooking, all these things, looking after children. They should, I mean, of course they should have some education, otherwise how are they going to read Prabhupada's books? That's the higher education. The so-called higher education is all nonsense. What people call higher education. They're very proud, I'm going on. They think they become a better person by getting higher education, but it's all meaningless. This whole material world, what is it anyway? It's simply rejected. It's just like someone knows how to diagnose stool and someone goes on and get a higher education. How to diagnose stool in a more complex way. And what are you doing? You're diagnosing stool, that's all. So I'm more expert in diagnosing stool than you. In other words, I've got an MSc, you've only got a BSc. Or I'm a chartered accountant, he's only an accountant. But it's simply, who's more expert in churning stool, that's all. It's equivalent. Because there's nothing in this material world. I mean, you may do. We're not saying don't become a chartered accountant or whatever, but you shouldn't think that I'm a better person because I've got this. You're a better person as much as we develop our Krishna consciousness. And real higher education means to understand Bhagavad Gita. So, these factors we should try to implement in our life. It's not that... you see, Prabhupada, he was preaching among the hippies and he made some concessions for them, but he spoke so much about Vedic culture and he wanted to implement that. So it's not that we should become hippies and think that that's the standard. Because Prabhupada, he was preaching among hippies, therefore we should all become hippies. Just like I saw some paper, which has actually become very influential in our movement. It's amazing how people can be so stupid. Which said that, when we first joined the movement in Tulsi Arati, the men and the women used to circumambulate together. But then they changed it to have separate Tulsi plants, or then first the men and then the women. So this is very bad. We should go back to the original thing. And the original thing was that they're hippies and they don't know, you know, how to behave as human beings. So they were circumambulating Tulsi together. And then they said, all these sannyasis came and they changed it and it's discrimination against women. The sannyasis changed it because they read Prabhupada's books, and when Prabhupada gradually brought more books out, when he discussed these things and he personally taught about it, the sannyasis went to India and saw what the culture is, that men and women, they don't mix up. But now they're thinking, you see, the sannyasis, they brought all these changes and it's very bad and we should go back to the original thing. I was in Europe last summer and it was Tulsi Arati, and then I circumambulated. All of a sudden, I saw to my right, there's one brahmachari, on my left, and what's going on? Because they're thinking, we're going back to what the original thing that we did in our movement. And it's stupid. They were hippies, and gradually some culture was introduced, but they think that this is... Yes, there's discrimination. There is discrimination. We discriminate that this is a man's body and this is a woman's body, and there are different duties. And there should be separation. That's what's stated in Shastra. They're saying, we're all Vaishnavas. We're all Vaishnavas, and I just divorced this Vaishnav, and now I'm going to marry another Vaishnav, and it's all transcendental. And they want to call the women Prabhu. And they're insisting, you have to call Prabhu, which is a male term anyway. It's just like saying, Mr. Radharani, like, or some. There are so many girls' names. Some girls' name like Sangeeta. So, Mr. Sangeeta, you're speaking. Is that Mr. Sangeeta? I mean, it's just ridiculous. Sri Sangeeta Kumari. It's ridiculous. But they're thinking that, you know, because Prabhupada writes in one purport, all Vaishnavas should be considered as Prabhus. See, Prabhupada's... I mean, they're just ridiculous. These things are going on. in our movement. You see, Prabhupada said all Vaishnavas are to be considered Prabhus. So that's a philosophical point. It doesn't mean that now the women should be addressed as Prabhu. And of course, there are some letters where Prabhupada it says something about Joan Prabhu or something. You'll never find it in Prabhupada in his conversations or lectures ever referring to. And when they ask, should we refer to women as Mataji, Prabhupada said, yes, Mataji. And he always says women should be referred as Mataji, not Bainji. That is wrong, Prabhupada. Or they should be. When he specifically, I said Mataji, but in some letter it says Joan Prabhu. I think it may be because Prabhupada would say, this is the letter to be dictated, and his secretary would write. That's what I surmise. But they see, even Prabhupada called his woman disciple Prabhu. But how is that? So many strange things are coming. But yes, there is discrimination. Just like you discriminate. Discrimination is always there. You eat rice, you don't eat rat poison. You discriminate. Discrimination is always there. If the president of the country comes, you don't treat him like your servant. I saw when I was coming in at the immigration. Now before they had separate lines for Indians and Pakistanis in one line, and GEC one line, and European community in another line. Now it's all one line. So I saw ahead of me there was some Indian or Pakistani, and I saw the guy there was giving him a hard time. The immigration official, you could see he was being mean with him and kind of nasty with him. And then a couple of Germans went ahead of me, and he was all smiling and nice with them. He's discriminating. So that's that kind of discrimination on the basis of adverse discrimination is not wanted, but discrimination is always there. There is a difference between, and Shastra says that as long as one is not completely free from the duality of considering, as long as he's not on the platform of oneness, of seeing everyone as spirit soul, then he must keep the discrimination between the sexes. Otherwise, he's going to fall down. If you say, "Oh, we're all one, we're all Vaishnavs," and then all mixing up, and then fall down. So, in the name of being trans, this is what the Sahajiyas do. They say, "Well, it's all transcendental," and this in Vrindavan, you'll find this. Yes, it's all transcendental, and these are my female disciples, and we're all having a transcendental love affair. But it's rascal. So discrimination must be maintained. And even if one is fully self-realized, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was asked by his disciple, who was a young woman, "I want to speak with you privately." He was a grandfather, and she said, "No, it's not possible. I cannot speak with you." There's no question, he's a fully self-realized soul, but no, he wouldn't do that. Even Prabhupada, his sister, Prabhupada was like 80 years old and his sister 70-something. His sister came to see him. Prabhupada immediately called his servant, "Come in the room. I should not be alone with a woman." She's so strict. So it must be maintained. Discrimination is always there. If you say that, now we shouldn't discriminate. Yes, discrimination. And discrimination also, there's a certain role men have and women have, according to the body. Spiritually, everyone chant Hare Krishna, serve Krishna, go back to Godhead. But there are certain roles to play. Just like Arjuna, Krishna didn't tell him, "Stop being a Kshatriya. You have a duty to do as a Kshatriya. Within that duty, you serve me." Not that, pick up a Veena, become Narad Muni. He never told him. You just wander. Narad Muni is Narad Muni. His duty is to wander here and there. He's a brahmachari, sannyasi. He wanders here and there and plays his veena. I'm not telling jokes. I don't know why you're laughing. Why? His duty is to wander as a sannyasi. Now, of course, Narad Muni, you see, one time he kept Kayadhu in his ashram, the mother of Prahlad. That was unusual. He can do that. It's not for everybody. But basically his duty is to wander here and there, and he's traveling here and there, and he's a brahmachari, he's a preacher, not exactly, no. But Arjuna had a different duty. He's a kshatriya. He had to fight for Krishna, on Krishna's order. Krishna didn't tell that you stop doing that. According to his psychophysical condition, he was expected to serve Krishna like that. Now, maybe that someone becomes, they may transcend that position, and they're recognized as such, and they're accommodated like that, just like Ganga Mata Goswamini was a guru in our Gauriya line, who was, she was a princess. As a young woman, she left home, and she lived in Vrindavan, a very austere life, and her guru told her, don't do this. Anyway, she did it, and then he was satisfied that she could do it. And then later she went to Puri, and she had disciples, and she was respected as that. But that is unusual. That's not the general case. And it shouldn't be tried for, unless one is actually... In other words, it's not absolutely that a young woman cannot live the life of a tapasvini, and even a woman may be a guru, but it's not the normal. Prabhupada was asked, can women be a guru? Prabhupada said, yes, but it's not usual. Because she has to be fully self-realized and so transparently self-realized that there's no question of anything else. Because that's there, the tendency, fire and butter. The example is given in Shastra. So you may say, then what about men becoming gurus? Because that's also there, they become gurus of their women disciples. But yes, but the system is that women are always to be protected. So the general system is that the guru will instruct the husband, who will instruct the wife. And even in meetings up until recently, they would have this screen. When women would attend satsangs, until recently, maybe up to 30, 40 years ago, there'd always be a screen so the men and the women wouldn't see each other. That's that same OBL Kapoor, I was telling about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he told his wife, I cannot see you alone. When he gave Harinam to his wife, he did so with a screen. Didn't even see her. They were so strict. That was the culture. Very careful. Of course, there were fall downs within that culture also. The possibility was always there. If you want to buck the system, you can do. You'll find some way. But the general culture was a very, very, very careful. Because that unnecessary mixing aggravates our already diseased material condition. So, of course, in these days, it's not possible to exactly bring it back just like that, but at least the basic principles should be understood and followed. That will be for our benefit. Not to follow is to invite trouble, invite disaster. We should understand very clearly this modern men, it's more likely to arise the tendency towards renunciation, but for women, their idea is to set up camp in this material world and, you know, let's be Krishna conscious in family life. And so they have a very strong tendency towards that, which is not condemned, but it's a fact. So from that point of view, it's considered less intelligent. But some of these things, it may be difficult for us to understand. And I think it may even be a GBC rule or something now that you're not supposed to say this kind of thing in class. I don't know what you're supposed to do when you read it in the purport. And, you know, Prabhupada said that, and Shastra says that women are less intelligent, but anyway, that's not true because the GBC said so, something like that. What are we to follow? We have to follow what Shastra says. So, that's the point. We have to follow Shastra, and that will be for our benefit. And if we don't follow Shastra, then we're going to have a lot of problems, and we're not going to be Krishna conscious. So we should consider all these things. We have to follow Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And we respect senior devotees because they follow Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Guru api avaliptasya kaya kaya majanataha utpanna pattipannasya parityago vidhiyate. Even if one is in the position of Guru, if he doesn't follow Shastra, even he may have been following previously, but he doesn't follow Shastra, if he rejects Shastra, then he should be rejected himself. That is the statement of Shastra. Guru means who follows Shastra and teaches Shastra. So we should know what is Shastra. How the Shastra is to be applied, that we have to see. Just like not everything can be applied all the time, in every circumstance. Just like traditionally, if you're going to do puja, you have to bring water from a river or a well, a particular well. Not the same well that is used by, just like if there are some meat eaters and they use that well, you can't use that well water for puja. There are certain rules and regulations. Ramanuja's sannyas came about because of, anyway, that's another story. So there are many rules and regulations to be followed, which are not possible to follow in the modern age. So acharyas, they will give the rules and regulations based on Shastra. They will give rules and regulations that are suitable for us to follow in the present time, place, and circumstances, and we should follow that. But we should not try to supersede the Vedic injunctions or think that we're beyond the Vedic injunctions or that they don't apply to me, they don't apply to anyone else, or that the Rakshasas of the modern age, they have got a better idea than the Vedas. No, we should be very faithful to the Vedic culture. That's why we even offer obeisances to Mayavadi sannyasis. Even though philosophically we have a very big difference with them. We'll call them all kinds of names, asuras and so many things. Still we offer obeisances because they follow the Vedic principles. They follow the Vedic principles of sannyas, and according to the Vedic culture, one must respect their learning and their renunciation. Even though their learning is, the conclusion is all wrong, still we offer obeisances because they follow the Vedic principles. We don't offer obeisances to President Clinton, but we'll offer obeisances. You can say, well, he's a great person. We don't offer obeisances to him. We'll offer to a Mayavadi sannyasi, even he may not be famous, because he's following the Vedic principles. And he has at least superficially faith in the Vedas. That's something to be respected. Okay, I really rambled on that. I'll finish there. Is there any question about this? Please be frank and free. If you have any, I've spoken quite strongly. Not only do I feel strongly about this, but I'm absolutely convinced, having been brought up in the demoniac culture and having seen and lived in a cultured society which probably most of you haven't seen. In some ways, I'm more Indian than all of you, because I know the culture more than most Indian people who haven't been brought up with that, don't know it. So I'm convinced this is, and of course Prabhupada is also pushing that. Prabhupada is also convinced. So I'm convinced of this, and I know it's right because it's Shastra. If we're told to have faith in Shastra, then we have to say what is right and what is not right on the basis of Shastra. So it's strong, but then Shastra is strong, is heavy. If when after women come to Krishna consciousness, are they equal to men? Well, intrinsically they are anyway. After coming to Krishna consciousness, yes, but still they have different social roles to play. That I already stated in the class. That applies even after coming to Krishna consciousness. They have different, socially they have a different role to play. Just like, it may be that the disciple is very advanced, it may be in some cases that the disciple is more advanced than the guru. That may be. But he doesn't think like that, and he doesn't act like that. I've seen many cases where the wife is more advanced than the husband. In many cases the wife is holding the husband up in Krishna consciousness. From the platform of spiritual understanding, yes, but still they have to follow the culture to maintain peace. In many cases it requires great sacrifice. It can be very difficult.
also.
In many cases where the husband is not even interested in Krishna consciousness and the wife is very much into it, still she has to make some adjustment and still serve the husband. Not that she, well, now I'm going to be Krishna conscious, so, you know, ditch the husband. That's not the proper approach. Because they have more time. The husband is busy working and the wife is at home and the kids are at school and they maybe have more time to read and this and that, or whatever it may be. But I've seen cases where the wife is more learned than the husband, but she doesn't impose herself on him for that point. If she develops a superior, I'm better than you or something like this, then it's simply creates a disturbance. I mean, I know it sometimes it can sound like we're, you know, trying to push the women into the ground or something, but it's not meant to be like that. In Vedic culture, women are also worshipped as Lakshmi. So both things are there. And the same thing, that women should be submissive, that doesn't mean that the man should mistreat her. That's a misunderstanding. Yes, at the same time, women shouldn't neglect their family duties to preach. I've seen that also sometimes, that, you know, we have to, there's higher duty, and the children are, they're not being fed properly. So the first duty is to be a devotee. The second duty, which must be combined with that, is to be a good wife and mother. And then anything else you can do on top of that is good. You can preach. Preaching begins with proper behavior, so not neglecting the family duties. Anything to say? Yeah, Pati Guru. Not Patni Guru. We've never heard. That's why the man, they should actually take that role, be responsible. Don't be irresponsible. Very sane, sober people are required. Bhaktisandra initiation, he gave initiation to women. No, he gave. No, women in the Gauriya line, there's always been. In Vedic initiation, the wife, the husband is initiated. And marriage means that whatever varna you marry into. So in Vedic initiation, simply the another three strands are taken on the Upavita. But the Pancharadrika initiation, initiated also, not in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they're not initiated. Yeah, they also have, because that's Pancharadrika system. Which Pancharadrika system means on the base of the soul. They can also worship Shalagram Shila, is it not? According to Pancharadrika system, they can. Yeah. Cooking. Uh, apparently in the Vedic age there was dietary initiation in some places also. And apparently I heard this recently, even Bhakti's Dham Saraswati also came. Maybe it's not something new that Prabhupada introduced. According to the Vedic system, it's not there. As far as we know, in the Munis, not many, but some. Gargi, you see the Garga Upanishad is printed. Gargi. And there's Maitreyi, also comes in the Upanishads. Ultimately, we're not the body. So, but there are certain guidelines from different bodies we're in. And it's not, of course, it's not only man, woman, but it's also according to Varna and Ashram, how Brahmana should act, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. There are so many duties one should perform according to his position in life. Garbhadhan Sanskar, you get a Krishna conscious child if you're following properly. That's to be hoped for. To be hoped for, it's not 100% guaranteed, but it's generally it's hoped for. Or even the child may be Krishna conscious from previous life, he may get such a child. But then everyone has their individual choice. So when they may grow up and they may be attracted to that, but then by their individual choice, when they grow older, they may decide not to be Krishna conscious. How is Prahlad Maharaj described in Bhagavatam that Krishna sent him to demonstrate the behavior of a great devotee? The behavior of a great devotee can be better perceived in a difficult circumstance. Anyone can claim to be a great devotee. It's easy enough to pose as a great devotee when everyone's lauding you, but to go and do something difficult for Krishna, it's like nowadays we hear there are so many Paramahamsas, we hear about this Swami and that Swami, and they're all Mahabhagavats. But from Gauriya Mata and this and that, because they give some lectures on Rasa Tattva, which, I mean, anyone can read and speak on that, but who went out into the slums of New York City and preached among the hippies? Well, there's no comparison. They're saying that, the really high essence you're going to get, which Prabhupada couldn't give, and so many rascal things they say, but none of them even dreamed of doing what Prabhupada did. None of them could do what he did. So the quality of a Mahabhagavat was seen in Prabhupada. I also think that myself, coming here, you're all very nice devotees, and you're all very respectful, and you're all very kind, and you treat sannyasis very nicely. So it's no glory for me, in as much as, you know, it's easy for me to talk so many things here, but the real test of these is on the battlefield. It's easy to talk big things when people are submissive. The real test is to go and preach among the rascals.